Does this mean that all units would have almost had identical training during the year?
Well, there was no. There were some problems in this regard, which we worked out by having some in common and some separate. We made the, you know, by now all three are shrinking under this quota system,
yes.
So it was feasible to do so. The opening of the evening would be as we had been doing. Those who wanted to come to supper or, you know, were not boarding somewhere, whatever it might be, could. And there was dinner served before the parade. Then the parade was common, although in three divisions, if you like, Navy on the right, Army in the middle, Air Force on the left, sort of thing. And your young naval officer sort of took charge of all the drill training, and he, from amongst all three units, drew up his rosters for instruction and exercises and so on in the drill thing. So that was common. Some of the basic sort of informational type lectures were common to all three services. You know, matters like service history and organization, this type of thing. Mm-hmm. Basically common information. But then the Navy, you see, were quite properly had to prepare their people for going to sea in their summer training, and consequently they would then veer into the specialist instruction in naval subject matters that were relevant to that, and we'd similarly break up in the same way. But that's how we resolved that globbing of us together.
One of the stated objectives of integration of the forces was so that people in different specialties would get to know the functioning of other branches.
Yeah.
Do you think that was achieved?
No. Largely an illusion that those who promoted it had.
How about as far
first,
as
I know what
UBC
the Navy
goes?
Does, but I can't steer a ship. You know, we really didn't feel that the integration imposed by the Department of National Defense at that time really changed very much from what we had already achieved on our own in terms of integration.
What do you think you did achieve on your own as far as integration goes?
Oh, well, it's acquaintance with primarily with each other and what the other fellow does and the program he goes through, and common social events, this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just almost a fantasy of Hellier's that you kind of by stuffing everybody in a green suit and mixing them up as much as possible, that you're going to send a trained infantryman to sea. You know, that's just bullshit. But that's what they've done. And you'll have noticed, I suppose, with interest, that the DND has just recently announced that the Navy now can retain their naval ranks.
Yeah.
You know, it's silly to call a captain of a ship colonel. Particularly when you're working with other navies that haven't gone that stupid route. So our Navy now, and I thought it would come about, have managed to hang in there, and now they're going to be lieutenants and lieutenant commanders and captains again in the old style.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, in the Air Force, these things perhaps don't signify so much. We were a very young service compared to the other two. We didn't have regimental traditions, and our rank structure, of course, and badges and so on, were primarily derived from the Navy, because the Royal Air Force was created by an amalgamation of the Army Royal Flying Corps and the Navy Royal Naval Air Service on 1 April 1918. And guys came in with hodgepodges of uniforms, and ultimately an RCAF, or an RAF dress, blue and naval rank stripes, although not in gold, and a cap badge rather close to the naval one, evolved. And of course the RCF then imitated the RAF uniform.
What objectives of integration did you in particular object to?
Well, as long as one used the term active, you had no objection whatever to integration. It made a lot of sense. In terms of the provision of support services in particular, broadly speaking, dental service always was integrated. It was an Army Dental Corps that provided dental services to all three services in Canada from, if you like, time immemorial. A good deal of supply, of course, was integrated. The Royal Army Service Corps provided all the basic rations for all three services, you know, purchased, warehoused, distributed, and so on, and had done so from time immemorial. What the cooks did with them after they got them varied from service to service, I can tell you, but the Army Postal Corps provided postal services for all three units. So there had been a great deal of integration, and one of the earliest phases of it was to integrate the medical services, because by and large, the illness, hospital care, and what doctors can do for you fall equally upon all of us. Although during the war, of course, there had developed a very specialist branch called aviation medicine, which was concerned with anoxia and these sorts of things, air sickness, and, that were rather specialist. Like when Commander Franks invented the GSU, we had decompression problems with operating airplanes, and so there was an area for specialization in aviation medicine. But by and large, medical services could be integrated. You could always have an Institute of Aviation Medicine branched off that or something. So that if you really examine the problem coldly, the only places where, in some respects, you could see that there was not already integration were really in areas where it required specialization anyhow. You know, it takes a lot of time and training to produce a good, capable infantry soldier with all he needs to know. And it takes a hell of a lot of time and trouble and training to turn out a competent pilot. And the guy is just not going to be both at the same time.
But don't you think there's something in the fact that the armed forces is becoming increasingly technical, and the place for an infantry soldier is, you know, his role in battle these days is very much diminished.
Oh, I don't know about that. I don't agree with you.
No. But certainly you must.
But you know, what I'm getting at is that the destructive effect on a regimental tradition, which was very important to the Army, the destructive effect of even the titles given this survival, the Canadian Armed Forces, I don't know what the hell they call it now, brackets air or something like that, is not nearly as appealing to me at any rate as a thing called the Royal Canadian Air Force, or the Royal Canadian Navy, or the Queen's Own Highlander, or the Queen's Own Regiment, or the Seaforth Highlanders. And indeed we do see, of course, in the reserve that continues, retention of these differences in dress and habits and so on. All, they're not just there because they're fun, but because they help a guy identify with what he's doing. You know, the reason guys will get up out of a goddamn trench and run across a bullet-swept field waving a rifle, they're hard to fathom. It doesn't make much sense, but the reason he does it, of course, not that he's particularly more courageous than anybody else, but because that's his family that's going. And it's the mutual support one has with them. However, these are
We'll get to the year 1968.
Yes.
This is the year that the units were disbanded.
Yes.
Well, I'll just ask a very general question now. What do you remember of that event? Why, okay, why?
Well,
how did you feel about it?
Badly. But, you know, I'd been at it so long that it was time I was out of it anyhow. It was colored a little by personal feeling, but not all that much. I just thought it was an ill-judged thing to do. It was something they were never going to recapture in the same way. You know, if there's another change of mind sometime. Mm-hmm. Perhaps I shouldn't say that, but rather uniquely here, it meant that the armories went, the nests went, the identity went. Now, there were a few ROTPs still, of course, still are a few going to the nesting, and administered by a staff officer out of headquarters down here, or recruiting, or whatever the case may be. And they lost right there, even only been for a modest number of people, that opportunity initially to weld them together into something, this sense of corporate identity I've been referring to feel they belong somewhere, you know. Very important.
How
these guys, we don't belong anywhere. They're just at UBC getting a government check, and occasionally they're drug into some lecture or discussion or something. And of course, they go off and get their summer training. That's where they begin to meld up. But I think that it was loss of opportunity to not look ahead and say, well, someday we're going to need more men again, and we better maintain that connection. They could be established, I suppose.
Yeah. How was UBC as a place for the military units?
Very good.
Why?
Oh, well, because of the total cooperation and interest of the whole university administration and staff. Put very simply, you know. Well, for most of my years, of course, it was Dr. McKenzie. And greatest pride was he rose to the rank of sergeant at one time, but managed to finish out the war as a private as he had begun it. And of course, he was decorated in the military medal and the bar to it in France in the First World War. And he had great empathy with the services and with their encouragement on the campus. And that pervaded, in a sense, the whole university as far as I was concerned and aware. We got just great cooperation from everybody.
What do you think the training units did for the students? What did it do for them as an individual?
Well, it in a fundamental way, I suppose it gave them what I'm going to call sooner rather than they might have acquired it later, a disciplined confidence in themselves. I don't know that I can expand much on that phrase. I think you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I illustrate it in this way. You know, you say in the fall of the year, and you're recruiting, and there's a relatively young girl plopping around, you know, 17, 18 maybe, in the early days with saddle shoes and tweedy skirts and sloppy sweaters, I think, was the mode of dress then. And it really was a gratifying transformation. I'll use that first year as an example. To fly down from Kingston to London, Ontario, for their graduation parade, and see the transformation in those girls in terms of their poise and manners, confidence, health, you know, a lot of exercise and success in a fairly competitive kind of situation, girls from other universities. It would just delight your heart. Now, they were good people anyhow, and they were going to be good people anyhow, but they got there that much quicker by this, I think. And also, they were much more aware than their contemporaries would be of these things that were of concern to the country, that is the international scenario, the purpose and place of armed forces and so on. I always remember at the very first conference I attended when the was announced that we were, there was a discussion in Columbia about taking the girls, but I ventured to remark that because of the natural proclivities of the selectors, the kind of girls we were picking were liable to get selected pretty quick again anyhow and be married and, you know, a loss to the service. And I remember the Air Commodore, what the hell was his name? Doesn't matter, but he was presiding or attending, and Flat Top, we used to call him. Later, Command of Transport Command. Ah, it seemed right in front of me, but doesn't matter. He gets up and roars up that, all right, he said, they get married. They'll be the mothers of the future, and they'll be Air Force minded, and sat down. But one could increasingly impose responsibilities on them, too, maybe in sort of kind of minor things, and be totally rely on it being done and done well. That was what they got into them, you know. So, and that would apply to all of them, the men and the women. I use the women as an illustration, too, of what I mean by an early arrival at a disciplined confidence.
Do you think that'd be part
of the subsequent success of many of these people has demonstrated that. Now, they might, you know, they would have succeeded anyhow, but I always felt that whatever efforts I made, although I was well rewarded by the service in monetary and other senses, the real reward of this was that a great opportunity to associate with a great bunch of young people for a long period of time. Keeps you young yourself, you know.
Do you think I'd be far-fetched if to say that, in a sense, you can the unit, the Air Force Squadron, contributed to the liberation of women?
Oh, sure. They were always liberated with us.